I wanted to be a multimillionaire.
I want to be the judge of how successful or unsuccessful I'm going to
take
be.
Take control of your life.
I meant the hustle was still in me.
I want to introduce this brother. We're going to really get a chance to meet and have a conversation with him together. You know, Eric Addison. Edison. I won't pronounce it wrong. Edison.
Addison.
Addison. I don't see. That's how we all get started, man. But
Clifton Addison.
This is going to be a good conversation, man, because I'm super inspired what this brother's doing. I believe he's going to impact a lot of people, you know, on the sport of golf, lobbying, sports agent. I mean, there's a list of things that we're going to talk about, man. But great to meet you, brother.
Appreciate it,
man. In person.
I appreciate you reaching out.
Absolutely, man. I mean, it was important for me too, man, because anytime I see a brother doing some dope things, man, it's important for me, one, to see what gas I could put in the fuel. Two, you know, I love brothers doing dope shit, man.
Likewise.
So now we're gonna, it's time to get to it, man. So born and raised in Miami? I know Miami's home for you. Born and raised in Miami?
Born and raised in Miami, man. Mm. Grew up in, you know, an area close to Carroll City.
Okay.
A lot of people know the area from Rick Ross. That's kind of like his hood where he grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, middle class. My dad, he came down from New York. Mm-hmm. My parents, actually, they met on an airplane. I think my dad was coming down here for a conference. And my mom's from Miami. They met on the airplane. And within 6 months, I don't know what my mom told my dad, but
you got him.
He moved to Miami.
Right.
And I'm here.
Well, what industry were your parents working in?
So my dad, he's in finance, and he's still in finance. He's a CFO of a natural gas company.
Nice.
And my mom, she was she worked at Jackson Memorial Hospital, which is the largest hospital in the Southeast. So come from, you know, two professional
home,
yeah, but you know, they came from, let's just say, humble beginnings,
absolutely. And when you're raised in a home that starts with humble beginning, you still kind of get that, no matter how middle class or upper class you are, you're still gonna feel that pressure.
Yeah, I feel like Miami kind of provides that atmosphere, right? Because you got, you know, access to South Beach where you see the yachts, you see the Rolls Royces. But then when you go back across the bridge, like they like to say, you see the real Miami.
See the real.
You know, and that is kind of like what humbles me and keeps me balanced.
Growing up in your home, was it brothers and sisters? Or?
Yeah, I have three brothers. Well, I mean, not three brothers. I have three siblings. I have a brother and a sister, but I grew up with one of my sisters.
Okay.
And the other two my dad had from a previous marriage. Well, previous relationship.
Relationship. And growing up in the home, man, how was it? You know, growing up in a middle class in Miami.
I mean, it was pretty good. We had a swimming pool in the back. You know what I mean? It wasn't, honestly, like, you know, my dad introduced me to golf at a young age. I think he was really keen on providing me the opportunities that he didn't have growing up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he worked very hard. I didn't see him that much, which I understand now, but I mean, I lived a very, you know, not extravagant life.
Yeah, I get it.
I had a comfortable life. I didn't have, you know, worry about where I was going to eat, et cetera.
So I ask this often because you're not the first story I've heard that their father had to, you know, pick work. What would you pick? Your father being there and not having, or your father going to work, being able to provide?
I mean, I think in every family there's someone that kind of changes the dynamic, right? Like, and with that, there's going to be sacrifices, right? Like, yeah, I didn't have that close of a relationship with my father, but he still raised me the right way and still, you know,
made principles were still there.
Absolutely. And made me the man I am today. So I don't think I missed out on anything. And I'm truly blessed to have a father that is willing to sacrifice so much and work late hours to provide for his kids and give them access to like golf, You know, I had the ability to go to law school. My parents helped pay for that. So, I mean, I think that with everything, there's give and take. But I think I was more on the giving end.
So. Right. So growing up in that home, the nurturing, how was your friends? You know, did you have friends that didn't have those things? Were they hanging out at your house?
So, like, that's the funny thing about Miami, and I'm pretty sure anybody that's from Miami could attest to it. It's either you live on one side of the bridge or you live on the other side. Like, middle class is still one class. Absolutely. And it's still, you know, tied closely to poverty. Like, I went to school in Liberty City, went to Miami Northwestern. That's, like, literally across the street from the Poke and Beans. Mm. So, you know, I've seen, you know, what takes place in low-income areas and, you know, like, the things that are associated with that. So I think, like, any, like, hood or any area around the country, you know, you see certain things that kind of, like, shock you and, you know, you still have access to that. And then also, too, the cultural dynamics of Miami, right? Like, everyone's going to want to gravitate towards their people. You know what I mean? So, like, if I had to be around Black people, I had to go to the Black area to hang around Black people. You know, so just being exposed to that and also being, like, an athlete in high school, you know, all the good football teams are in the inner city. You know, so, like, I would say I had a very, like, well-balanced life. And my parents never, you know, made it seem as if we had more or we had less.
But
the opportunities were there. Absolutely.
But because, you know, for me growing up, the friends that had their mom and dad in their home, like, I gravitate. Even though I had my stepmother and my father, I had a two-parent home. But I just ran to the homes that had both loving.
Man. Everybody, my house on the weekend, man, our pool was like,
it was lit.
Man, it was like packed jam.
Yeah,
everybody
was
packed in there. My mom, she throwing hot dogs on the grill, hamburgers, you know. So I definitely, we had that kind of
you guys
atmosphere.
Were the home that.
Like, everybody came to our crib on the weekends and hung out.
And you say you played sports in high. You played sports in high school. What sports did you play in high school?
I played basketball mainly. I played football. Ran track, and also I played golf, which at that time I didn't really want to play golf. Yeah.
Well, why didn't you want to play golf back? Because it wasn't sexy.
It wasn't cool, man. You know, like, the girls, they wasn't messing with
you if you
played golf. Like,
I remember
one situation. I took my clubs to high school, and I kind of hit them. Like, I tried to hide them in the classroom, like, right by the gate so I could pop out of there with them. And a girl I was talking to, she caught me. And she was like, Cliff, what is that? I was like, oh, it's a guitar. I'm just taking it to
music
room. You know what I mean? Because it just wasn't a cool thing to do. Like, you know.
Did you enjoy the sport back then?
I did. I started playing golf at 5 years old through this great program called the Joe Roach Foundation. Joe Roach was, like, one of the first Black caddies in the United States. And, you know, he developed this great career of being a, you know, expert in golf. And he decided to open up a nonprofit where he teach, you know, kids of color how to play golf. So I started that program at 5 or 6. And I pretty much grew up in the program until I left for college.
So, and your father played golf also? Or?
Yeah, I think my dad, like I said, my dad came from humble beginnings. He started playing golf when he... maybe like in his 30s or 40s when, you know, it was the cool thing to do on the corporate level.
Right.
So he was building relationships with new accountants, new people in Florida. So that's when he picked it up. And, you know, he made sure I picked up the game.
Was it the whole family or he was just really particular to you?
It was me and my sister. But my sister dropped that thing like a hot potato.
Because
my dad, like, he understood, like, what golf is and how
value
how instrumental it would be, like, being a professional Black man. And, you know, he kind of went a little too hard. And, you know, like, he would be like, man, we got to go to the driving range tonight. We'll hit, like, 100 golf balls, et cetera. My sister wasn't messing with that. So she developed, like, this kind of resentment towards the game of golf. And I did, too. You know, anytime you're forced to do something, especially from your parents, no one likes to be told what to do. I wanted to play basketball. I didn't want to swing a golf club.
So, but with the intensity that your father brought into the sport and being active in your life in that capacity, do you appreciate it today?
Oh, man. You have no idea. You know, those golden nuggets that he was giving me back then just paid off so tremendously. And that's kind of like why I decided to do Urban Golf Weekend and all that stuff, because I want, you know, other kids to have what I look like me to have those same opportunities that are presented to me.
So what are some of the things you believe, you know, because I guess it's not just in the golf capacity, with your father instilling that hunger, that fight, that we're not giving this up. Like, what are, like, give me some of the things that you learned in that process and how you implement them today.
Well, I think, like, just going off of golf, like, one of the things is dedication. Like, if anyone who knows anything about golf, you got to be dedicated to the sport. Like, you're not going to know how to play overnight. You got to be on the putting range. You got to be, you know, hitting a lot of balls on the driving range. You got to do your chips. Like, so you have to be dedicated. Like, and that's kind of like something that rubbed off on the business side for me, right? Like, I'm super dedicated to anything. Like, I'm a person that's going to stay late, you know, do whatever it takes to get the job done. So I could say that, like, that characteristic kind of rubbed off on me in the business world as well.
So from high school, where did you guys decide to go to college at?
So I decided to go to FAMU, which is a HBCU in Florida.
Yeah, trust me, living in Palm Beach, South Florida alone, I think a lot of us know FAMU is located.
Yeah, man, I was up there on the hill, man. Some of the best times of my life. Really enjoyed that experience.
What was so first day you got to FAM, what was that feeling?
Man, I was like, they got girls that don't got gold teeth? I'm in love.
She can speak English?
She can speak, like,
she's
what's
not
going
a city girl.
Exactly. Not to take anything away from the city
girl.
Girls,
don't
but
please
just
don't.
Like everybody else, man. I like, you know, options, you know? So I like options. So I'm meeting people from all walks of life, right? And the most, you know, empowering thing was they look like me. You know what I mean? So that's what I really like about, like, HBCUs, that we have such a strong network, right? And that doesn't just exist, like, in the HBCU that you attend, but it exists at every HBCU. Like,
that culture is all over.
Yeah, that culture, you know, like, I could be in, you know, L.A. You know, if it's some dude that go to Morehouse, man, he gonna dap me up just like I went to Morehouse. You know, it's just that bond that we have that's just, it's priceless.
So, and did you decide to join any fraternity or any sport?
Nah, I wasn't really. I wasn't that guy, man. I ain't really have to do all that. You know?
Right, right.
A lot of things came easy to me at FAMU.
Based on just the community overall?
I mean, the community, and, like, I had a sense of who I was. Like, you know, not to knock anything, you know, from them brothers.
I get the difference.
But, like, I didn't feel like I needed to be associated with any group to do what I needed to do.
Did you knew already before you even got, you knew what you were going there for? You knew you were going there for law?
No, I didn't. I thought I was going to, you know, be an accountant like my dad, and then I ran into college algebra. Then, you know, that grade told
that
me something different.
Well, that changed some things,
yeah,
huh?
That changed some things. So, yeah. So I think I got like a D in college algebra because I wanted to go to school of business.
Right.
And they were like, look, man, you're going to have to figure this thing out.
You can,
like,
read, but the mathing is not mathing.
So I ended up, you know, going into poli sci. And not because I wanted to get into
poli
sci.
What is poli sci?
So political science. Political science. Sorry. So, you know, I ended up going into poli sci not because I wanted to be like a political scientist, or get involved in politics, or be a lawyer. It was more so that was the only thing I could do.
I could get out of this one.
Yeah, but while I was there, you know, I ran into this professor I'll never forget, Professor Beam. And he was like, brother, you could actually, like, write for real. I was like, for real? Mm. He was like, man, you need to really look into being, you know, a lawyer, you know? I was like, a lawyer? I never thought of that.
You know, I want to say that real quick, right? So, because I hear this often, even me, when somebody believes in you and give you that nugget, like, man, you know, you could be great in this, and they instill something in you. What did that do for you?
Oh, man, that just hit a light switch instantly. And I think that, like, that's the big difference between going to HBCU and going to a PWI, predominantly white institution. Like, at a HBCU, the school invests in you, right? You know, only way you're going to fail at HBCU if you fail yourself, if you just don't want to do it. But at a predominantly white institution, you're just a number. Lost. And there's really not, like, a lot of interaction or cohesiveness amongst students and, you know, faculty. But at an HBCU, that exists.
Is it because it's a smaller classrooms called the tight niche?
No, I think it's just the culture of HBCUs. I think that, like, they understand the difficulty of being a black professional in America, and they just do everything that they can to ensure that you have the most success. And it's like, you know, it's going to be tough when you get out of here, but while you're here, we're going to try to make it the most comfortable and the most informational and the most resourceful. So when you do leave, you're prepared to face what's out there in the real world.
So it's basically like, this is what it looks like. You know, you're getting basically tips and tricks of, this is what you're going to, you can pick this, you can pick this, but this is how it's going to be.
This is the reality. Yeah. Like, our professors are in the class, in the, you know, classroom telling us, like, this is what you're going to experience. So get ready for it. Like, that's not the same engagement that you're having at a predominantly white institution. So, like, I really, truly am an advocate of HBCUs. And, you know, I try to do everything I can to kind of push people to go to HBCUs.
And what else about the HBCU culture, man, other than
it's a vibe,
the
man.
Education?
It's fun, man. I mean, just like any other
friends
college. But I think the thing that kind of, like, sticks out the most to me is just that network, man. Like, you know, like, I think it's like 20,000 students at FAMU, and I think I'm probably connected to 19,000 of them that I went to school with. You know, like, we all stay connected. We all support each other.
So, like, you guys still have that relationship?
That cohesiveness, that friendship. And I think that is just so, like, important, especially in the business world. You know what I mean? Like, having relationships with people in different industries. I mean, you know, you just never know, like, what type of opportunity a relationship could present you. And that's something that I learned to value at FAMU.
So go back into, like, you know, when the professor actually said, hey, I love what you're doing here, let's keep on going. Like, finish that up for me, please.
Yeah, so, you know, I was just from that very, you know, point, like, I was on track to go to law school. And, you know, I started making straight A's and B's. Like you said, like, somebody believed in me. I started believing more in myself, started doing more independent research about law school. And, you know, ended up getting accepted to Southern Law. And
so was it more of the pride? Like, pride started kicking in when it comes to, or just the accomplishment that you wanted to accomplish school, or?
I think it's a mixture of all things, you know, that were taking place in my life. Like, you know, my parents knew that I was getting bad grades because, you know, they'd be sending the paperwork home.
They're going to find out,
like,
before you.
You know, my parents were highly disappointed with me. And obviously they sacrificed so much and had so much riding on me. I didn't want to let them down. And then I had that support system at FAMU. Like, if I ever needed something or if I had any questions, I could reach out to my professors and they'll be like, man, just pull up on me. Come to the office. Let's work this out. Let's talk about it. You know, I had a very strong circle of friends that were moving in a positive direction. So I think, like, everything kind of just aligned to help steer me in the right direction.
So in that process of, you know, going into law, did you know where you were going to practice law? Or was it a thing?
No, I kind of had an idea. You know, growing up in Miami, we all know football is, like, big, you know, especially the high school I went to, Northwestern. So I was like, you know what? Like, I did just see that movie, Jerry Maguire, and that seemed like a pretty cool job. So maybe, you know, it's a lot of lawyers that's a lot of sports agents, that's something I need to look into. So that's one of the things that kind of motivated me to do that.
To go into law in pursuit of being a sport agent.
Correct.
And then that because you're not only a sport agent, you're also in a lobby business? I don't know.
I'm a lobbyist.
A lobbyist. What is the definition of a lobbyist?
A lobbyist is sort of like a lawyer, right, in the courtroom, but instead of the courtroom setting, they represent, you know, clients in front of the legislature. So if you are a business, I would represent you in front of the legislature and, you know, help pass laws that benefit your particular interests or your company.
Is it any particular business, larger scale businesses or?
So most of the larger businesses have in-house lobbyists, and then the smaller ones typically, you know, deal with like a trade association. So if like you're a painter or you in tech or you know, they have lobbyists that represent a association.
And then when you got into the sports agent side of your business, how was that? You know, how difficult is that?
Or? Man, that's probably one of the toughest industries to get involved in, just because you're competing with people who have a lot of resources. And when I first got in, I was like, man, you know, I could do this. So I jumped in and started a business for myself. Mm-hmm. I signed a couple of clients, but it's tough, you know, competing with those larger
big boys.
Yeah. It's just like you creating your own college and Alabama come knock on somebody's door that you recruiting, like, bro, they're going to Alabama,
right,
for sure, you know? So, yeah, definitely a very difficult terrain. And then, you know, just the nature of the business, like it's a lot of backdoor deals.
Absolutely.
That people do. And, you know, when you're a stand-up person and you operate off principle, it's sometimes hard to kind of navigate in that terrain. But you know,
what would you need more of other than clients that to help that business model grow?
Money.
Yeah. Let's get into
it. It's expensive. Like to travel to see players, to get hotels, to do business dinners,
take care of things
right. To pay for like a lot of, you know, something a lot of people don't know is like, you pretty much like once you sign a player after college, you have to take care of them. So you have to pay for their car rental. You have to give them money to survive. You have to rent them a car. You have to fly them around to
before you get to
events.
The big deal.
Yeah, you know, and you know, all that stuff could cost $50-$60 per client, and you have to front that as an agent. So it definitely can be a very you know, expensive.
Yeah, is that something that you're open to people that say, "Hey, I love what you're doing. I want to invest." Is that something you're open to hear investors come into, or?
So right now I work for a mid-size agency. So, you know, I think we're pretty close on that front. But like if there's a deal where, you know, we could go half on a player. I mean,
there's ways.
You know, I'm a businessman.
You're
you
open
know,
to make it make
if
sense.
If the numbers make sense, we could sit down and talk, man.
Yeah, you're open to make it make sense. And even in the industry of lobbying, what's your everyday works? Like, what does that look like every day for someone that want to be in this space?
So I would say, like, for me, I kind of do it all over the country. So I travel to different state legislatures, depending on, you know, if there's a bill up that's a priority for my organization. So I'll travel there and I'll meet with different elected officials and see, you know, what strategy I need to get a bill passed or get a bill, you know, opposed in the process.
All over? Or all, Florida? Or
all over, man. All
so
over.
You could be in one city and next city?
I don't know. I could be going for like 2 weeks.
Wow.
So I travel a lot. But I really, really like lobbying. And I think it's important for like people of color to get in lobbying because like lobbyists play a big role in the lawmaking process, right?
There's huge value you guys bring
Absolutely.
Into that.
Absolutely. Like those are the people that's on the front line that's, you know, really making laws.
You don't hear about this.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that, you know, you see a lot of people that look like us that we're in the room, like brokering those deals and, you know, making legislation. So for me, it's even more important because I feel like a lot of things that we're deprived of is because we don't understand the value of politics. We don't understand the importance of getting out to vote. So like just me being involved in the process and just being able to like talk to people about it is super important to me.
Because I think for me growing up or even just now, when you hear about somebody going into law school, it's a practice criminal injury or something like that. Mm-hmm. You don't hear a lot of people come out and say, I'm going to go, you know, being lobbyists. And the value, you know, minorities being involved in that space, it sounds like it's a huge need for it.
It's a huge need. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, just networking, right? Like I developed relationships with some of the most powerful people in each state in the country. I mean, those are very, very important relationships, right? So, you know, just being able to have those, you know, relationships and to foster those and, you know, to help people get to a higher office is important.
It's important. So now let's go into the other part of your life, man, that really got us here. I'm talking about urban golf. You said it right. Urban Golf Weekend, man. I don't know if for some reason said that. I definitely
didn't
mind. You
can't forget it, man. Because you're definitely going to be there this show, man.
Absolutely. No shirt on and everything. Let me stop, man. No, no. I was super, super, super inspired, man, mm-hmm. by when I watched some of the content and saw that you guys were playing the game of golf, but really enjoying yourself. You know, I remember coming. We actually used to film a lot of behind-the-scenes content for Black Enterprise Golf and Tennis Challenge. Mm-hmm.
I used to go to that when I was a kid.
Yeah, we used to film a lot of their content when they up here. And see how powerful that is? And I used to always say the power. Like, when I first filmed that, my company actually first filmed that event, I was blown away by the fact that we were able to see mom, dad, kids. Oh, some people have been doing this for 10 years.
Crazy.
They grew up with each other.
That's crazy that you know about that, man. Like, honestly, that's like the first, you know, like blueprint to urban golf is actually Black Enterprise. Like, I used to go to the golf tournament because my dad used to be involved with Black Enterprise. And they used to have it at the Doral, which is now the Trump. Mm-hmm. And I used to be like, man, look at all these beautiful, powerful.
I was blown away because they brought it up here.
Yeah.
And PGA National. And I was blown away.
Man, I used to be inspired at a young age.
So imagine, like, and that's why I think for me, I'm going to make sure, you know, I aggressively do whatever I need to do on my side, man, to really help develop this, man. Because
I appreciate that.
I already know for the next 20 years, man, we're going to be, because I know for us, because a lot of my mentors are telling me now, they continuously tell me this, man, lock in. Mm-hmm. To 20 brothers that you guys are going to marry each other for 20 years. And by all means necessary, y'all need to hold each other down because that's the relationship that you need nowadays. Because when they were 35, 40, 50, they locked in to their somewhere they met on a golf course somewhere. And they grew up, you know, they grew with each other. And for me, something like this, I was super inspired, man. I know what I do in multi.
I appreciate it.
All in. I know what I do in the multimedia space, and I know how important it is for us to develop and be more present in that side in the marketing and multimedia space. So I definitely want to bring value to that. But I was definitely influenced by it. Before I go into my spiel about what I saw, give a little bit. Please give a description of what the experience like.
Yeah, so, I mean,
urban, and how the whole thing came about, too.
So, I'll start off with, like, how it came about. So, it came about, I, you know, had a conversation with the ED of the organization that taught me how to play golf. And they do this charity golf tournament every year. But, you know, she's getting older, and at some point, you know, she is going to have to move to the side and allow, you know, some of the other people who run who are involved in the organization to kind of take over. So me and another friend that grew up in the organization, we kind of, you know, came up with the idea of like having our own like golf tournament. Right. So I said, you know, if it's going to be a golf tournament I put on, like it got to be done like in a cliff fashion, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, only so, right.
You know, and not only that, like, I know how instrumental and empowering golf has been to my career, right? So I wanted to kind of open that door to people who haven't been exposed to, golf. So pretty much we decided to, have our first golf tournament last year. And, we incorporated regular events that were just themed with golf. So not only was, the weekend for golfers, but for non-golfers alike. And we had tremendous success our first year.
That's beautiful.
Like, we had pretty much 500 attendees.
Wow.
And that's something that I kind of, put together in, 2 months. I knew I had good relationships, but I didn't know my relationship
was like that. Talk, my brother.
I'm being for real. So, I was super impressed with myself, I was able to put this together in a couple of months. And, I'm just, blessed to be in a position where I have a really, really, really good circle of friends that
name some of the people because I got inspired by even some of the people
The board, man. They said the board is like
heavy.
Superheroes, the black corporate superheroes. So, we got Dr. Triggs. He's a plastic surgeon down in Miami. We got Josiah Grimm. He's a personal injury attorney that's doing super duper well. Also, we have Hope, who's out in D.C. She's the youngest black woman to have multiple dispensaries. Mm. Have my friend Rudy, who's an engineer for Turner, which is the largest construction company in the country. Beautiful. I mean, I just have a dynamic, circle of friends that do great things. And, it was just organically, put together. Like, I had no idea when I met these people, I was going to do a golf tournament and a golf weekend.
We're definitely doing a live podcast down there this year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's, I could only imagine that group of people, the knowledge and the, man.
Yeah.
It's special.
And then it's just like, it's all industries across. And we got Jones, who's a good friend of mine, who I met while I was in Tallahassee at FAMU. He's the largest black owner of tax businesses in the Southeast.
Wow.
I think he has 50 locations. So I don't know. I try to surround myself with like-minded people.
Absolutely.
And people that's moving in the right direction. And, a lot of times that's a good decision to make.
100%. You did a great job doing that. When is the actual event?
So the actual event is every Labor Day weekend. So I think the first day is August 30th. That's where we're going to do our private event at Topgolf. We buy out the whole floor. They have an event space that holds 300 people. We have an open bar. We have food, DJ. It's just a vibe. That event, like I said, a lot of people ask, is urban golf about golf and do I have to know how to play golf? Absolutely not.
It's family, man. I can tell right away.
It's networking and giving back before, right? Mm. And then, golf is secondary to those two things. But, it's just an opportunity to fellowship and network with high caliber people that look like you. And hopefully, urban golf continues to grow and it becomes the premier event for 100%. People of color.
I'll put my money on that.
And, have a good time and give back. All of the proceeds that go to, last year, all the proceeds went to the organization that taught me how to play golf. This year, we're switching it up. We're giving to that organization, but we want to identify 3 HBCU golf teams that we could give to, because we know that HBCUs in general underfunded, and a lot of golf teams are cut because they don't have funding. So we want to make sure that we kind of help those programs out and give them the resources to survive.
So right away, man, what comes to mind for me is why? Why did you decide to impact in this capacity?
Because I just know all of the great opportunities that golf has presented me. Like, even when I was a kid, I met all these famous and influential people from the game of golf. I met Tiger Woods. I met Earl Woods. I met Dr. J. I met Bill Clinton, you know, on the golf course. So at a very young age, I noticed that golf was something that regular people are not really involved in, and it was more of an aristocratic thing. And I think that, you know, just knowing how to play golf and being in that culture, it makes people look at you differently in the business world. I think in the business world, it's really not about race. It's about commonality. And if you have characteristics that people relate to, like golf, then sometimes you could build a relationship where other, you know, characteristics are not common. And I met a lot of people that I have very close relationships with on the golf course. And I think that, like, it's essential for one that, you know, people that look like us build more cohesive relationships and, you know, do things more like collectively. And also, you know, golf is a sport of, you know, businessmen. And I think that, like, the narrative that we see in the media is for a black person to be successful, they have to either play basketball, football, or pick up a microphone. I think that, like, urban golf, right, with my board and the video that went viral, it just provides another example of black excellence and something that's more realistically attainable. And it gives, you know, the younger generation a path and other people to look up to, as opposed to the quintessential people that lead the black community. So I definitely wanted, you know, to open the doors in that regard and just give the kids, you know, another example of what success looks like.
But also to add on the giving back in the money side, mm-hmm. you know, that's important for us also, because you could give them a lot of information, but to put money back into Correct. The community. Why Correct. Was that so important?
Because we need resources, right? You know, and you know what they say, if you don't have a seat at the table, you on the menu, you know? Facts. And I feel like our people, we don't have enough seats at the table to be able to, like, do things. Like, lobbying is important because, like, a lot of companies and a lot of organizations hire lobbyists to request money from the state or the federal government to help them in their endeavors. So it's just, we need the help. And, you know, like, more importantly, like, if we don't do it, who else gonna do it? We can't expect somebody else to do it. So I know if this is something that I understand, I know, like, absolutely, I'm gonna do everything I can to kind of help out. So that's kind of like where I am. And I wanna see, you know, people like me come up and, you know, do great things.
So what's next for you, man? What's next between your I didn't even ask you children or anything like that?
No children, not okay. married.
No, so you out, you're a little bit outside, but not outside.
I'm not outside. I'm in the that's I'm right. in the boardroom. Right. I'm in the boardroom. I'm in the boardroom.
You're right. You're right, my brother. I apologize. I know better too. With you being in the house in the boardroom, now let me stop. No, but, you know, going into this phase of life mm-hmm. and where you are and building this brand, mm-hmm. first year, you know, from what I saw experiencing Black Enterprise Golf and Tennis Challenge, mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of potential you guys have, man. I don't know if you guys are also doing workshops and all those other things, man, in that capacity.
It's funny you say that, because that's kind of like the next step for urban golf. I see us kind of like transitioning into more of the conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we have like this outstanding board, man. And like, we've received such an overwhelming love from just like, you know, the community, like, people reaching super out to super. Us like, man, like, we really enjoy seeing like people that look like us do what y'all doing, like, you know, keep it going. We're going to pivot and, you know, have panel discussions on different, you know, industries, mm-hmm. health, entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You know, AI, you know, all of the,
yeah,
the
technology, that, AI, credit, business, yeah, and, like there's so many different industries.
And, you know, not in a, in addition to like keeping our same like networking fun atmosphere, but also educating people and giving people resources so they could go back to their communities and kind of, you know,
give more
and, you know, and maybe take something and do something, you know, great. So
you have a youth component also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what we like I said before, we're identifying an organization that teach kids of color how to play. And we're going to, you know, donate to a couple of those organizations. But also, too, we're having clinics coming up that work with that go to like parks in the inner city and just teach kids how to play golf. In the community, so they don't have to go nowhere. If they, you know, don't have access to a ride, we'll come to them, you know, provide the golf clubs, provide the balls, and just teach kids how to play in the community.
I have a great mentor of mine, man, Malachi Knowles. He has an organization here in Palm Beach. He's building a facility down the street, inner city, ICYG, Inner City Youth Golfers Association. If I messed up again, Mr. Knowles, I apologize. I know better. But he started an organization also, African-American Golfers Association.
Mm. You got to connect me with
Absolutely,
him.
Man, because the value, he went to Morgan State. Mm-hmm. I think he started the first year they started golfing Morgan State. Mm-hmm. He's the one that actually connect me to, it's crazy how the world works, man. The Black Enterprise, because him and the founder, they went to school together.
Wow. Boy, you brought up Black Enterprise. Boy, you took me back with that one.
Yeah, because it's
the culture. It was so dope.
Man, I want everybody to experience that, man.
Urban Golf is the 2024.
And I love it, man. I promise you. That I did it like, we worked that contract like 3 years, man. And it was mind-blowing to me. You know, just the whole experience, just the... Mm-hmm. The luxury, the lifestyle, the culture, man. Like, I seen so many dope Black people. I've never met so many Black hotel owners in my life.
Wow.
It was like, oh, yeah, I own 3 hotels. I own 6 hotels. We're building a...
That's definitely the vibe you're going to have at Urban Golf.
It was just a regular day.
Like, and also, too, I got a you know, shout out my boy, Darren Hawthorne. He's the president of Golden Crust. You don't know who Golden Crust is, the largest Black-owned restaurant franchise in the country, and me and him went to law school together. He's also on the board, so that same aspect.
That's heavy, man.
Yeah, yeah, and like
that's for the culture.
And the crazy part about it is like he's a very like chill, subdued guy, and I think I asked him like, you know, what you gonna do after law school? He's like, man, I'm about to go back and work with the family business. I'm like, what's the name? Like, what type of business? He was like, you know, it's a Jamaican food chain. I'm like, what's the name of it? Golden Crust. I'm like, bro,
he made it seem like
should have stock. Yeah. Like every day after high school, I bought a cola and a patty from there, man.
The culture,
like,
man. From here all over, New York.
New York, I mean, I'm Atlanta, familiar, all they over. Have over 200 locations, and that's not the most impressive thing. They actually, like, do better on the frozen patty side. They sell, you know, they're all this Walmart.
And they just have a vegan product now because somebody actually told me, like,
look.
So, yeah, I know.
So, I mean, like, Urban Golf is that experience. Like, you just never know who you're going to brush into. And that's what we like about it. And, you know, everybody, you know.
It's accessible. That's another thing that was huge.
Absolutely.
When I experienced the Black Enterprise, golf and tennis challenge, mm-hmm. that. Everybody was accessible.
Yep.
Down to earth, like somebody would grab a drink with you. And
down
to earth. You're kicking it. You know, there's no, I'm better than you. It was like,
absolutely,
man, brother.
No.
And like literally exchanging numbers with CEO of Pepsi. And you're like.
Yep. And I feel like that's something that currently like our culture don't have. Like we don't have that professional, cohesive type of event where like professional people of color could come together and network on a high level, and brainstorm and build
other businesses by just meeting through there.
Exactly. Like, you know.
You got it, brother. What you have with your organization and what you're doing in Miami, man, you got it. From just the video alone, I already knew. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
They
I mean, it's going to be, it's a vibe too now.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a vibe.
Saw the vibe, but then I also saw the people and the energy was just like, you could tell it was just so much love.
Yeah.
And then when you're in that atmosphere, it's basically like, I feel like we're selling this, but it feels so good though. Selling this, bro. It's not even like it's a sell. It's just, I really want people to experience this, man.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been in that capacity where high quality black people laughing, kicking it.
That's crazy that you know about Black Enterprise.
Listen, like, there's so much more I know about that. I tried not to tell, but now I want to let people know about these things, man, because it's definitely helped me out in my growth in business and just interacting. And I've met so many amazing people through that. So I know when we lock in, I want to bring my tools and resources with me to what you have going on and do whatever gas I could pour into it. You're doing a great job, but I know the power of multimedia and marketing and the things that's needed in our community. Like we talked about, you know, hopefully we lock in our contract before this play where you need to start a golf podcast. Like we need golf. Great. Like we,
it's on the way, brother.
Like,
it's
because I already know, like, it's something special about that, man. And then because the thing, what I feel about what we're, you don't have to be a pro golfer. You can just talk about the sport and then the network, the business.
Right.
Because I think golf has so many dynamics and so many different pieces that it actually brings, it impacts.
Absolutely. And I'm also proud of, you know, two brothers that's doing really great things in the golf fashion world. I don't know if you're familiar with Eastside Golf.
No.
Eastside Golf is the biggest, like, black brand, and they got partnerships with Nike, partnerships with, you know, Jordan brand. And, you know, the founders of that are two dudes that went to Morehouse, Earl and Olajuwon.
So dope, man.
And Earl is like my boy. You know, like him and my godbrother, Darian, are super close. And, like, you know, he played for Morehouse golf team. And just to see, like, I was just in New York at a party, and I see him kicking it with Jeezy, and I see Jeezy, you know, wearing his apparel. So like,
because Jeezy's heavy in golf now. He started picking up golf now.
And if you go to Jeezy's page, you'll see Eastside Golf. That's something that, you know, two black brothers from Morehouse created. And, you know, like, these are guys. This, you know, Earl's somebody I knew for, you know, years back when he came to Miami. I used to, you know,
get him right.
Like, pull up, take him to the strip club, like, show him a good time. Show him love. What I mean? So just to see my brother,
you don't know what we about to do, boy.
Like, on the same frequency, right? Like, just understanding, like, how big of an impact golf has, and being able to package something that we could relate to that kind of pushes people to the game of golf is dope as hell. And I'm super proud of those brothers,
too.
So I got to give them a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And so for me, man, I want a couple questions, man. What do you define success? How do you define success?
So I define success by how many people you bless. So the whole purpose of urban golf is to give, and to give people more access to the game of golf. And the more, you know, opportunities that we could give people in our communities to play golf is what success looks like to me for urban golf.
And the last thing, man, because, you know, in our space, man, just really hustling, working hard, man, you know, a lot of people speak of balance. What does balance look like for you? Is that a real thing?
I don't really got a lot of balance right now, brother. I'm going to be honest with you. But, you know, one thing my mom always told me is that to have what, you know, people don't have, you have to do what people won't do. So I'm just in a chapter of my life where it's all about the grind. But, you know, that grind put me on this show, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. Anything else that you want to touch on, man?
No, that's pretty much it, man. I just want to say I appreciate what you're doing. You know, more positive, you know, activity. We need that.
Absolutely.
In the community right
now. And a lot more to come, man. A lot more to come. We we cooking up good over here, man. And
I see.
Promise you, man. Like,
and I look forward to the collab with Urban Golf Weekend, and you know, we're about to cook up real good. Absolutely.
You know, we have something else that we're doing in Miami soon also. So it's going to be a lot of exciting things. We're going to go to dinner after this right now, my brother.
Let's finish
the conversation, but God bless. Good night. Thank you, my brother Cliff, man. I
appreciate you, bro.
This is just the beginning.
Like,
yes, give them your website, the website. For
Yeah, so anything related to Urban Golf Weekend, it's simple, urbangolfweekend.com. Same as our social, IG, Urban Golf Weekend. Look us up, man. We doing big things. If you want to come to an event where it's by us empowering Black people and also extends your network, Urban Golf Weekend is where you want to be.
Thank you, my brother.
Appreciate you.